This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast. Hello, welcome to Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. I'm your host, Claire, and we've got an important mission this month. It is Brain Tumor Awareness Month, and we're shedding light on a crucial issue. Brain tumors claim more lives among children and adults under 40 than any other cancer. Shockingly, only 1% of the national spend on cancer research is allocated to this silent threat. Because today, right here on Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show, we're taking a stand. We're not just talking statistics. We're sharing stories, real heartfelt stories from people all around the globe who have been touched by a brain tumor. It's time to raise our voices and spread the word. By listening in, you're joining a movement to make a difference. Okay, so we're going to give Ashley a call.
Hello.
Hi, Ashley. It's Claire.
Hi, Claire.
Thank you very much that you're going to talk about your dad and about the book that you've done. So should we go back? Tell us a bit about your dad.
So dad was diagnosed with thyroid cancer when I was 12. He was about a week away from his 4th birthday. And it was a real big shock, really, because he had absolutely no symptoms at all. So about 6 years before that, a lump had come up in his throat and he'd been to the doctor and the doctor said it's an enlarged thyroid, it's absolutely fine, nothing to worry about, and we just got on with life really and didn't think anything of it. And then he went to the doctors for just a bit of a checkup because he was turning 40 and just wanted a bit of a sort of health MOT really. And the doctor that was there said, I don't care why you're here, you need to have that neck looked at. And within 3 weeks, he was diagnosed with stage 3 to 4 thyroid cancer. So he had the thyroid removed. And when they removed that, they also removed some lymph nodes. And the lymph nodes showed that it had spread. And then about 3 years later, it came up in his lungs. So he'd had radiation as well after he'd had thyroid removed, but then he had 2/3 of one of his lungs removed. And it was classed as stable. So you still have cancer, but it doesn't particularly appear to be growing anywhere. It doesn't particularly appear to be causing any trouble, really. So he was classed as living with cancer. And one of the things we were blessed with the thyroid cancer was that it was something that could be monitored in the blood. So he just had regular blood tests and that would show whether the cancer was particularly active. So a few years later, the blood test results started coming back saying that the cancer was definitely active and he was having all these scans and they couldn't find it. And at the same time, there was just a few other things going on. So he was getting headaches. His memory was a bit off. He was having some quite serious mood swings. Like, dad had been on quite a lot of medications. It wasn't unusual for him to lose his temper occasionally, but it just seemed to be getting worse and it seemed to be becoming a bit more irrational.
You were studying away. So when you did see him, you saw a real difference in his personality and you were the one that picked it up and said, I think he might have something again. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I said to mum, they were doing these blood tests and they were showing that it was active and he was having these scans and I was like, we can't find it. And I just said to mum, I really think that he needs a brain scan. I really think all these symptoms, when you put them together, and all they were testing from the neck down, and the doctors were absolutely adamant, they said it won't cross over the blood brain membrane or whatever, like it won't, his cancer doesn't move to the brain. And mum fought it a little bit in the end. It took a little bit of convincing, but I suppose you get to the point where you're like, we've got nothing to lose really just by having that scan. And if they're right, great. But they weren't. And he had a brain scan and it showed 8 tumours in his brain.
Oh gosh.
And there's nothing more we can do. So he was put on steroids And the steroids helped to control the sort of swelling in the brain, which helped to control the headaches. And you could definitely see with him, when the swelling was starting to come, we instantly learnt those triggers. So if the headache started coming back, he started to feel unwell, and they would then adjust the steroids accordingly. So that managed it very well, and he had a week of radiation to try and slow down the growth. But by this point, he did say he didn't want any, because if the outcome was going to be the same, then he wanted to at least be as healthy as he could for the time that he had.
Yeah.
I genuinely believe if there had been a treatment where they said, we can get rid of it, he'd have done anything.
Yeah.
But I think because it was, we can just manage this now. And when he couldn't work and when he couldn't drive, he started to lose parts of who he was. And for him, his independence, he worked from the age of 15. He was the provider for us. He was the one that took care of us. Mm. And I think at that moment, and he really believed that after his first bout of cancer treatment, he was home for about a year. He was really quite poorly after his radiation on his throat and chest, and had his own business that he lost in that period. So he just went to work for his friend as a scaffolder. And he genuinely believes that kept him going for so much longer, because the work kept him healthy. It gave him a reason to get up in the morning. It kept him strong and it made him fit. And yeah, he really didn't know what to do when he couldn't go to work anymore.
Did you find some support when your dad was unwell? Did you have somewhere to go?
So during it, no. We got very good throughout the years of dealing with it day to day. And it was probably about a year afterwards where it really hit home how permanent grief is, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it was about a year afterwards where I reached out and tried to speak to people. And it was partly that I'd moved out. We were also in quite a difficult circumstance, in the sense of, so Dad died on the 5th of April 2020, about 4 weeks after we went into a lockdown. We were in the middle of a pandemic. We couldn't have a proper funeral. We couldn't travel to scatter him where we wanted him to, because we weren't allowed to travel. So our experience was very different, but I actually was not grateful for COVID, but grateful for the lockdown, because it felt in that moment like the whole world had stopped with me.
I guess it gave you a lot of time.
And it wasn't until life started getting a bit more back to normal.
Yeah.
Where I thought, oh God, my life is actually never going to be the same.
Tell us a bit about the book, A Different Day.
As much as it is related to my experience, it was actually, I got my puppy because I moved away from my mum and my brother to live with my partner, and I was quite alone and I was really struggling. And I've always struggled making friends with people my age and finding connection with people when they haven't been through situations like me. Not that I want people to have gone through situations like me, but I think when you're quite young, whether it's when I was a child and he was first diagnosed, or when I was early 20s and he was terminal and dying and then died, there's not a lot of people outright who could necessarily relate to you. And maybe if people haven't gone through things like that, then you have different priorities. So you have a different view of life, I think.
Yeah.
I lived next door to a couple that we didn't really talk to very much, and it wasn't until I got the dog that the neighbour started talking to me, and her husband died very suddenly, and she was really struggling with the grief, and I think I could help quite a bit because I'd obviously gone through not the same experience but a similar experience. And Lilo, my puppy, just really helped her. And I've always worked with animals and I've always loved dogs. But it was that seeing that grief from someone else's perspective and how just those little things make a difference. Because I think when you're in the moment, you just go day by day, don't you?
Yeah. How long did it take till you then wanted to do the book where you thought, I want to get some of my feelings out, which I'm guessing is what you were doing, because I have to say it was so emotional. You're trying to show is it's okay to have to grieve, and that you don't always have to be happy, even though someone's trying to cheer you up, but it's okay. This is what I got from it. You don't have to try and be okay and kick yourself for being upset.
I think one of the most important things I've learned through this whole process is that you just have to allow yourself to feel how you feel. The best thing people can do around you is just allow you to feel that.
Mm.
Not try and fix it, not try and change it, because these big things that impact your life like that, they generally can't be fixed or changed.
No.
And some days I feel really angry. I'll hear a story where someone has miraculously recovered from cancer, and obviously I'm so happy for them, but I am so angry that wasn't my dad and that he's not still here with us.
Yeah.
And I think, that's what I was really trying to get across, was you need people around you, but they need to understand that, it's okay to have bad days, but that you will come out of it. Because I think that's the other thing, when you're really deep in those moments, whether it's the first few days after they've died, or whether it's, I'm someone who on anniversaries and dad's birthday, it hits me all over again.
Mm.
And I'm barely functional in those moments. And it took a long time to just allow myself to have those moments.
Yeah. I got married on the day that my mum passed away. It was a year later, but I didn't want to have a day where I'm really sad, because I've been working within cancer and brain tumours for 10, 12 years. And I just knows how those days are just dreadful. Like, you're so sad and you start the build up to that day, you're sad and it's horrible. So I was like, I'm going to get married on that day. And my husband now, he was just like, yep, we'll do it. And I was like, you sure? And he was like, yeah. And when we told people, they were like, that's madness. I think it was because I was trying not to be sad that day, but actually maybe I made a mistake and that wasn't the best.
Yeah, I think you just have to do what you have to do in that moment. I have a twin brother and we are so different with how we deal with things. I'm happy to talk about dad to anyone. I actually really like it.
Mm.
I find it really annoying if there becomes an awkward silence when I say my dad has died. I want to talk about him. I want people to know about him. Filled a room when he was alive, and I feel like we should be able to do that in his honour. Now he's not, but my brother doesn't like telling people at all. He doesn't. He'd really rather no one knew about it. And I think, everyone just deals with it differently.
Yeah. Your way of dealing has been to do the book, and now you want to give part of the money for it, you're going to put to brain tumor research.
Hope with the book is that
I
can raise enough money. So £1 from the sale of every book goes to brain tumor research. And my hope is to sponsor a day of research in dad's name, because we might not have been able to change the outcome, but I do think if it had been picked up quicker, if there hadn't been that reluctance to believe it would have gone to the brain, then potentially we could have had a bit longer, or there might have been some treatment that he could have had.
Yeah. How long have you done the fundraising? I know you have to get to 2,740 that you have for a day. And when you do that, you get the plaque, don't you, that's at the Centres of Excellence with your name on it. And
yeah,
I'm guessing that's why you wanted to do it as well.
I'm hoping I can put his name in his memory.
Mm.
And you go to this ceremony, and it's been really nice along the way as well to just meet people. Everyone's cancer journey is completely different, because I have never met a single person where the timeline and the diagnosis has been the same or anything like that. But it's nice to be able to talk to people who actually understand what it's like. And to get a terminal living with cancer diagnosis, or when it became his terminal dying of cancer diagnosis, what I didn't have around me was people who had been through it.
Mm.
And I think that would have made it so much easier.
You're actually really good at explaining what you went through. You could easily stand up in front of people in the same situation as you and talk about this with them. You're very good at expressing what you're trying to say. If it feels good to be able to share with people, you would be very good at standing up at support groups and stuff and telling your story, because you've got a very therapeutic voice.
Thank you. Very few people say that.
How long do you think it would take for you to get to, I don't know when you started doing the book, I'm not sure when you first put it out there, and I'm guessing it's on Amazon. I've got my copy here from Amazon, but can people get it from anywhere else?
Yeah, so I published it the 25th of July last year, which was my mum and dad's, would have been my mum and dad's wedding anniversary. Oh. And I have a website, so I can ship it in the UK. And then it is on Amazon as well. It's in gradually going into a couple of libraries, and I'm reaching out to bookstores and things as well. So hopefully, as it starts to sell more, it might be able to reach some other bookshops as well.
What would you say is the age bracket that you've got this for? It's very much for children. So what kind of age would you say this is for?
Yeah, so we've sort of been saying maybe a 5 to 10, 5 to 12 kind of age range, because I purposely wrote it to rhyme and to be quite lighthearted about a fairly sensitive subject, because I think that's important. I think one thing that my parents did throughout this whole thing is they were very honest to us from the start. We were only 12 when all this started, and I'm so grateful that they were just so upfront and honest about it all. I think that's made it a lot easier for us than trying to hide stuff from us. And I think we do need to teach children to be able to have these more serious conversations. But yeah, so we think 5 to 10, 5 to 12.
Yeah. And the dog that you've got in there is very similar to your dog. It's more of, it's a puppy, isn't it, really? But it looks
so
very
Lilo
similar
is
to your
my
dog.
Golden retriever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted, when I found, so the illustration process is very odd, because you just go online and you say, this is what I've done, and I'd like someone to draw the pictures to match it. And I had one person come through and he drew a couple of examples of Lilo, and I just kind of looked at it and I just thought, this isn't really what I'm going for. And then Sarah, who actually illustrated the book, she sent through an email and she said, what I like to do is I like to pick a page from the book and I'll draw it. And if you like it, then we'll go forward with it. And she actually drew one of the last illustrations in the book, which is Lilo and Mo, the little girl, sat together under the den having a bit of a cuddle. And it was when Lilo just realised that she just needed to sit with Mo and, you know, metaphorically hold her hand to try and make her feel a little bit better. And I saw it and I just loved it. And one of the things I really wanted was for people who knew me and Lilo to see Lilo in that. And all of the things that Lilo does throughout the book are pictures that I got of my pup, because she really did. She is nearly 2 now and she does brighten my day every day.
Yeah. And you're right, the picture of the girl does look like you. She's got the same hair parting as you. You can see that it does have a similarity to you. Obviously, you're a lot older, but it does look like you. So yeah, it's quite nice that you've been able to show it. It is very much part of you. It's your story. I'd wonder what a child would... I might actually do this and see what their reaction is. It'll probably be looking at the pictures, isn't it? And pointing out, oh, there's a bird, and pointing out what's in every page.
So obviously everyone has different beliefs of what happens when people die. Mm. I don't personally believe in reincarnation, but I do believe that a spirit stays somewhere and looks after us somewhat. And when my grandma died, my mum just related her to a robin. When my granddad died, she said, I think he's a squirrel. And then the day after dad died, we went into the back garden and 2 blue tits moved into a nest box in our house. And ever since then, a blue tit has been the sign for him. So yeah, on every page, of the book, you will see a robin and a blue tit and a squirrel to represent the three people.
Oh, that's lovely. That's lost. Really nice. That's really nice. Do you know what? It's funny that you say that, because I had a dog and I lost her last year and I was gutted, absolutely gutted. And the day after, and I was feeling pretty rough of sad, and a bird came up to the window. And I'm telling you, I've lived here for 40 years and it had never happened before, but this bird came up and was tapping on the window like for ages. And I was thinking, I was like, no way. I was like, is that you? I was like, have you become a bird and now you're off to go and fly somewhere? It was just the most bizarre, but really nice. So I was like, oh, and I never saw the bird again, but it was as if it was like, she'd said, oh, here I am and I'm fine. I'm off for another life. I'm like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a really bizarre. Yeah, but amazing.
I struggled with it initially, because I am a girl of science who likes to have a full understanding of things. Mm. And yeah, for a long time I've rejected it. And then one day I just thought, you know what? It makes me feel better.
Yeah.
If I'm having a really bad day and I go for a walk and I see a blue tit, there's just a bit of a weight lifted and I can just breathe a bit easier and it helps.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think, like I said, I think you need to just find whatever it is
that works for you,
helps you through.
Yeah, whatever works for you. My mum was called Eileen, and the song Come On Eileen, and they don't really play that song anymore. Like, it's not played very often unless you're on a really old channel on a radio station. And for the first, I don't know, month after she passed, we just all heard it on repeat everywhere we went. And it was like, oh, wow. But like you say, we was just like, yeah, we'll take that. That's fine. It was really nice. I understand it's probably nothing to do with it. But it was like, do you know what? We're going to take this. And it felt good. And we loved that we had it while we were at a garden center. And we were buying some stuff, and she's the one that used to do the gardens, do all the plants and stuff in our garden. And it was just, again, really surreal. And it started playing her song, and we were like, okay, this is weird, but great. Yeah, we'll go with it. That's great.
Yeah, it definitely helps me just to think that he's somewhere.
Yeah.
And it made me, the day I decided that I didn't have to understand the whole world, just for some reason, just helped me to, breathe a little bit easier and just take the little wins.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not saying, oh, there she is, or any, I'm not saying, oh, there she is. It was more like, it was just a really nice moment, a couple of moments that were like, oh, this felt really nice. In the moment.
Particularly after they've been gone a little while. We don't talk about them as much, and sometimes I see something or I hear something, and it's just nice to just, that little memory just comes back to you of whatever it is that moment reminds you of. And they're some of my favorite things. Some days they take you really off guard.
I remember
my dad was a Geordie, and it was probably 18 months after he died that I was at work and I heard that northern accent, and my heart stopped for a second, I think, and it really took me back. But as time goes on, that actually becomes quite a nice little thing to remind me of him.
Yeah,
it's a funny thing, grief, because we're nearly at 4 years, and it's just the weirdest thing. It feels like it was yesterday and forever all at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I think my mum comes up on the next month. It will be her second year. And it's just, it comes up and gets you and you're like, I don't know, you never stop thinking of them. There's not a single day that I don't have her in my head. But these days, it's, oh gosh, it's 2 years soon, and it doesn't feel like 2 years. It's just, it's a strange feeling. It's still waiting for it to come through the door. Like, it's not quite there yet. But yeah, I'll tell you something that was quite funny. So my mum had Botox done once. This is a really random story, okay? She had Botox in her forehead once because we were going to a wedding. And it didn't really work. And we didn't, for some reason, it just didn't work too well for her. Anyway, 20 years on, because this is since she had that Botox, I decided to go and have Botox done because I'm getting married. I'm married, but I'm having an actual wedding this year. Anyway, so I thought I'm going to have Botox done. So I'm at this place having this Botox and the lady was like, whatever, listening to me. And I was telling her, oh, my mum had this. It didn't really work. I'm hoping it works for me. But then I was thinking to myself, I wish I didn't say that because I felt like I'd said something a bit harsh. And when the minute I came out of the place where I was, I got shat on by a bird. And I'm not kidding. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, I'm sorry I said it.
I didn't mean it, mum.
I know, I did. I was like, I'm sorry. But it was just, oh my gosh, that just was little moments. But the little moments, we'll take those. That's fine.
There are definitely times where I think, but yeah, he's sending me a sign of some description.
Yes.
What actually are you doing out there?
Yeah, exactly. Is there anyone you want to say thank you to? I always think it's nice to have an opportunity to thank people.
I think the most important person in the world is my mum. Mm. Like, she is just an absolute Wonder Woman. Like, just the way she raised us and kept everything as normal as possible while we were going through all of this, the way she has carried on after my dad was her everything, and everyone knew that, but I wouldn't be as strong as I am without mum and dad. Dad has a friend who called him Iron Man because the cancer just kept coming back and he kept just fighting it, and he lived so much longer than anyone expected, and he didn't do it with a smile every single day, but he was very strong throughout it all and he never let it beat him.
What does your mum think of the book?
So when I first said to my mum, I've written a poem and I think it could be a children's book, and she was like, oh, for goodness sake, Ashley, it's another one of these like projects, like you don't have enough going on in your life. And I read it to her and she cried.
Oh.
And she's just been the biggest supporter ever since. Mm. My dad used to write her poems. So my dad was one of the least romantic people you'll have ever met. But he used to write her silly little poems in their Valentine's cards and anniversary cards. And he was always making up like little rhymes and things. And so when I started to write down my feelings, as the counsellor suggested, it just naturally started flowing into a poem. And that's the biggest thing for him, really. I think he would have really loved it.
Mm.
I think he'd have probably been my biggest champion. And when he got diagnosed with the brain tumours, and they gave him 12 months to live initially. And in that year, I was trekking the Alps for charity. So my mum works for Children's Hospice, and I was trekking the Alps to raise money for them, and I was also graduating from university. They were like his big milestones. He was like, I need to see this, I need to see that, and then I've done everything I need to do, sort of thing. And I think he would have really liked this. I think he'd have really liked the story. I think he would have loved Lilo. I think he would not have liked the mess she makes in the house, but I think he would have absolutely loved Lilo.
Yeah.
And just the way she's, yeah, made me feel better. And he, one of the things I would say to anyone who is going through anything like this is just do everything you want to do, whether you've been given a month or 2 months or a year or 5 years. It sounds cliche to say live every day, but just do everything you want to do. So he, in those initial 12 months, he renewed his vows with my mum. They had a little wedding where they had originally got married, and all of our friends came and were able to celebrate their marriage. He bought a box and he started filling it with baby clothes ready for when we have children. So it was all like, my dad loved babies and loved going clothes shopping for little babies, so he bought all little things that he would have bought had he been here to see them. He bought my wedding dress ready for when I get married. So he was able to, he's able to still be a part of all of those things, even though he's not here.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, just.
Your dad sounds
after
like.
The initial diagnosis.
Your dad just sounds amazing.
A couple of weeks. Yeah, he. Like I said, if he had his way, he would have lived for as long as he could.
Mm.
But yeah, he really did take the opportunity to go, do you know what? He never felt sorry for himself. That was one of the things that we were most proud of him throughout the whole thing. He never felt sorry for himself. So he was like, if this is the card we've been dealt, we need to make the most of it. Mm. And we really did that. We really, there is nothing that we could, obviously on my wedding day, I'll miss him, but there really is nothing that we could say. We wish we could have done that with him because yeah, he's going to be a part of all of it.
Mm. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that you came to talk about the book and talk about your dad.
Thank you for having me. I honestly do. I really love the moments I get to talk about him and yeah. remember him. And it's an absolute honour to be able to do something in his memory and to try and support people who are in similar situations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is the Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show. It's a show full of informative chat and inspirational messages. The Auntie M Brain Tumors Talk Show on podcast.